B-Pod Studios.
Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain and inform you in the afternoon. Felger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Near point now, Pasternak. Shoots, deflected, and it sails behind the net. Zaitsev didn't get much on it. 9 seconds left. Far point now, Marchand. Not a lot of time. Pasternak with five. Walks in right of the net. Krejci fires. Pasternak shoots. Blocked. Rebound. Blocked again. And the horn sounds. The Toronto Maple Leafs.
Both of those blocks were by Marner out in the high slot. Tavares had no stick. Marner got down and blocked the first one. Came right back to Pasternak. Tried it again. And Marner got a piece of that one as well.
The Toronto Maple Leafs have taken the upper hand in this best of seven series. They win game three, 3-2.
Okay, resetting our Bruins thoughts. I think the number one issue last night is and it's a cliche, I hate to use it, but they sort of lost puck battles. They were second to most pucks, which is just sort of a weird and frustrating switch from what they were in game two, which was complete, just physical engagement. So they go from being completely flat in game one, weirdly so, to physically engaged like you read about in game two. I'm sorry, game one, I don't know what I just said. Game one, they were flat as you read about. Weirdly so in game one. In game two, they're physically engaged through the roof. And then in game three, they sort of backslide to what they were in game one. And I think that showed itself on all three goals they allowed in the second period, where they were in good shape defensively. It's not like they were allowing odd man rushes or guys were getting behind them defensively, but they were in their own zone all three times, chances to clear, you know, loose pucks, free pucks, pucks that they owned, and they lost battles in the pucks in the net. First one was absolutely unforgivable. Torrey Krug had it all alone, easy chance to clear. He gives it up, and the next thing you know, you get scored on by their fourth line on a really greasy bad goal. The next two are on the power play, but they're similar. Patrice Bergeron, of all people, has a chance to clear on the second goal. He gets his pocket picked. The next thing you know, Austin Matthews scores. That was the second. And the third, Brandon Carlo had poke checked it into the corner. You're in good shape defensively. Next thing you know, you lose coverage in front of the net. Puck's in the net. And so they just sort of weirdly lost races to the puck. They weren't as physical as in game two. So it felt like Toronto's speed was back on the table last night. And that's just sort of weird how we're going sort of back and forth night to night with this team and its intensity. Wasn't expecting that.
No, look, and I wasn't expecting it either. But if we're talking about the series in the aggregate now and saying, why are the Bruins, you know, why are they where they are? How about, can we start with Bergeron?
Okay, so here's point two. Outside of just the general effort, it's the production of your first line or the lack thereof. Through three games last year, I think that line combined for 20 points. On the series, that line combined for 31, okay? But 20 points through the first three games. This year, Bergeron has no points 5-on-5, and the rest 5-on-5, all they have is that Pasternak to Marchand goal in game two. Otherwise, they have nothing.
Yeah, to me, and I'll tell you what, it starts with Bergeron. I'm sorry, and I understand that we all love the guy for good reasons. But right now, that line, and him in particular, he's number one on the list. At least Pasternak last night, they were throwing bodies at. And I have a hard time criticizing Bergeron, too, because of what he's been here over the course of his career. But if we're going to deal in facts, quick question. Who's the worst Bruins player in the series, plus minus?
You tell me, please.
Patrice Bergeron, -3. Patrice Bergeron. He's -3 for the series. So it's where else do you go? They're getting outplayed there. Now, look, if I'm Cassidy, I switch it up. I take Pasternak off that line. I'm going to make the Maple Leafs make a choice because they're clearly targeting Pasternak. And they're smacking him around last night, so get him away from Bergeron and Marchand, and then they have to make a choice. Are we going to smack around Pasternak and let those two guys go off on us? Because Bergeron and Marchand should be able to do it.
So this is now the choice facing Bruce Cassidy, and I find it fascinating. It's a case to be made for both. Feels like he's staying the course, and time will tell whether that's the right call or not. But again, as Fluto Shinzawa writes in The Athletic, it's sort of plain to see. He writes that it wasn't even that Brad Marchand, Patrice Bergeron, and David Pasternak weren't good enough in game three. They weren't good enough, period. He says the number one line has met its match, a first line that's been better. And that's one centered by John Tavares. Fluto writes that John Tavares is playing better all-around hockey than Bergeron. His line mates, Zach Hyman, is playing good defense, using his wheels to establish the forecheck and matching Brad Marchand's energy. Mitch Marner, who's got 2 goals and an assist, has gotten the better of Pastrnak, 0 goals, 1 assist. Marner one-upped his counterpart on the game-ending 6-on-5 scenario, hitting the deck twice, and you just heard it, absorbing back-to-back shots from Pastrnak. Fluto writes that it's been unusual to watch the Bergeron trio fumble pucks, throw poor passes, and not put any consistent heat on Frederik Andersen. But that's what's happened.
Yeah, them whiffing and fumbling on passes, especially on that last power play that they had in the third period, it was infuriating to watch.
Okay. Fluto writes that on home on Monday for the first time in the series, Leafs coach Mike Babcock had the comfort of the last change, and he rode it hard. Just about every time the Bruins' first line hit the ice, so did their top unit counterparts, the Tavares line, in unison with defenseman Jake Muzzin and Nikita Zaitsev, Toronto's most thorough shutdown pairing. Muzzin, in particular, has been Toronto's strongman. Pastrnak knows this firsthand. Throughout the night, the number one right wing repeatedly had to pull Muzzin's shoulder out from his chest. The Leafs' game plan on the Bruins' most explosive offensive player is simple. Blast the sand out of him. So this has happened. I mentioned this in game one, that it was obvious. Zaitsev and Muzzin were out there for Bergeron and specifically Pastrnak. In game two, Tavares seemed to wilt a little bit under that Bruins pressure. The whole Leafs team did, but the matchup stayed the same, and Cassidy never really ran away from it. Not really. And now that the Leafs are home, Babcock can really dictate that matchup because he gets last change. And again, Cassidy's just riding with it. And here's the dilemma, as Maz says. What you can do is you can take Pastrnak away from Bergeron, give him to David Krejci. And then that says to Mike Babcock, well, I'm using Muzzin to beat the bag out of Pastrnak. Do I keep chasing Muzzin out there against the Krejci line now because Pastrnak's on it? And does that free up Bergeron? Or do I keep that first D pair in Tavares on Bergeron because that's really the key to it? And you make him make a choice. And then does that free up the other? With Pastrnak being with Krejci away from Muzzin, away from Tavares, getting to go against Austin Matthews and Hainsey in that second group, does that free up Pastrnak? This is the whole point. This is hockey 101. This is the whole point of having two lines, of balancing out your scoring. You can easily do that. Or you can say what Cassidy said last night, which is, we like our guys, they're better than them, and ultimately it'll tilt in our direction because we have talented players. Here's Cassidy after the game.
If we feel that it's really an impediment of us having success, then we're going to get away from it or break up the line. We do it at times, we move past around, but at the end of the day, if that's a matchup that he wants, he's going to get it eventually. Even on the road, you can get it at certain points. So we tried to get away from it on some icings to see if it would work our way, but tonight wasn't able to go, so we'll see how it plays out Wednesday. But I honestly don't mind it. I mean, it's two good lines going head to head every night. We're gonna, it's gonna tilt our way at some point. Our players are too good.
It's gonna tilt our way at some point. Our players are too good. Like a manager riding a guy in a batting slump. He's too good of a hitter not to hit. So you keep throwing him out there, and eventually he hits. And that's what Cassidy's betting on with the first line. Is that the right strategy?
No, I mean I don't think it is, and I'll tell you why. Because I think the strategy going in was sound, which is they couldn't handle us last year. They couldn't handle the group last year, so until they show that they can handle it, we're going to go back to it. Fine. I totally get that. But they've been able to handle it. So now you got to adjust. And I just think this is one of those things where, like, what are you going to be, stubborn now? Like, just what, because you don't want to give in to Babcock?
Okay, listen, I would change him up, too. I've been saying it for months. I want Pastrnak with Krejci. That's what I want. But I'm just playing devil's advocate to you here.
Sure.
A little bit. It's also saying, well, those are our best players, and those best players are better than their guys. It's time for them to play like it. Why don't we just count on that versus us changing up our lineup? Why don't we just have Bergeron and Marchand play to their capabilities?
Because I think it's time to shake it up, and it's been three games, and those guys have done nothing. Nothing. Zero. Bergeron's a -3. -3.
And this is not including the shorthanded goals. He was on the ice for both of them last night that won the game for Toronto.
Right. That's right. Those don't count.
Bergeron and Marchand, the PK gave up the last two chances, or gave up 2 second period goals that were the difference. Both Marchand, Bergeron out on the ice.
I mean, so Toronto's got how many goals in the series? 8? Bergeron's been on the ice for 5 of them? I mean, is that what we're saying? Because last night, the first two power play goals that Toronto has scored. And he's a -3.
Sounds
so that's
right
three.
To me.
So that's at least 5 of the goals that he's been on the ice for. So, like, I mean, again, to me, Bergeron is a problem in this series right now, and I'm not telling you it's staying that way. I love the guy, too, and I believe in him. But I don't love the idea of having those three guys together, and then Krejci's got nobody to play with down there.
Could it be Boston that Tavares is better?
Sure, it could be that.
I just think that they're tougher. That's the one thing I didn't give them credit for.
Toronto's tougher than they've been in the past.
Yeah, yeah. And the goalie,
Or are they tougher than the Bruins?
Tougher than they've been in the past.
Okay.
Yeah, and the goalie, Anderson, has been the best player in the series in these three games. He really has, and I think he's a stiff, too. So they've surprised me on that end.
I mean, look, the whole reason Tavares is there is to counteract Bergeron. That line. That's the whole idea. Again, last year they scored all those points. I thought it was 30. You said 31. Whatever. We're splitting hairs at that point, right? So fine, 30-plus points in the series. So you look at that, and Toronto says, if we could just play that line even, we win the series. So that's what they want to do. They went out and get Tavares, except now they're even winning it.
And now Cassidy says he doesn't mind that. Two good lines going at each other.
Yeah.
Like Cassidy feels okay with that draw.
Yeah, I think that that's a mistake. I think if that matchup is a draw and they keep it as is, the Bruins lose the series. If they take Pastrnak off it and it's a draw and Pastrnak's playing with Krejci, then I think the Bruins have a chance to win the series.
I think it's close. I've said it for months. Pastrnak should be with Krejci. I'm just saying, you're going to let Jake Muzzin run you off the ice? Wow. Maybe this team's not as good as you thought. Tavares is an elite player that you all overlooked. That's one thing. Jake Muzzin and Zaitsev are going to run off the perfection line. Maybe they're not as perfect as you thought or as good as you thought.
Well,
or,
you know, go ahead.
Or they just got off to a slow start, and if you wait it out, they ultimately will win because they are better players. It will tilt in their direction, as Cassidy says. He's making a bet. And it's going to be, either way, it's an easy second guess. Either he's going to be really right, that line turns it on, and they turn around and win this series, and Bergeron's a reason why, or they get rubbed out, and we're going to go, well, you were too slow. Too slow on the trigger, pal. You relied too much on those guys. Easy second guess coming up here on Cassidy. Someone's going to be right, someone's going to be wrong. What do you think? To you right after these words.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Mez, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Leads to the power play for the second time. Riley into the slot with a shot, and I don't think Rask saw that until he heard it. Now a chance in front of the net, a shot! Scores! Austin Matthews! Holy mackerel!
Even on the penalty kill, Marchand and Bergeron. That was the second Toronto goal. Austin Matthews starts with a face-off in the Bruins zone. Tavares versus Bergeron. Tavares wins the draw. Next thing you know, the puck's in the net. Bergeron has the puck on his stick. Chance to clear it. He gets his pocket picked. Marchand starts to leak a little bit because he thinks Bergeron's going to knock it off the glass. Instead, again, Bergeron with the turnover. Next thing you know, it's dished over to Austin Matthews, wide open front of the net, 2-1 lead, and they wouldn't relinquish it. Their second power play goal, same thing. Marchand and Bergeron out on the ice. So your best players aren't coming through. You just wait for them to come through, or you start mixing it up?
I start mixing it up. I do. You know, the Tavares factor can't be overlooked in this series. That's all. And I looked this up a little while ago, too, for, you know, even strength. Faceoffs. Tavares, 28 wins, 22 losses. Bergeron, 22 wins, 28 losses. The numbers are identical but inverted, which tells me that they're basically going head-to-head pretty much them all the time.
I'm telling you, that's Babcock's trying to get that matchup, and Cassidy isn't really running from it.
I mean, it's 28-22 for Tavares. That's 56% to 44.
Tavares is getting the better of your guy.
On the dot, for players like that, that's an ass-kicking. I mean, that's a big difference.
Well, Bergeron, you mentioned, was 56% in the regular season.
I mean, he was one of the, you know, basically top 10 guys in the league, and Tavares isn't far behind. And in the playoffs so far, Tavares has beaten him.
Okay, so we have that. We have the Demaryius Thomas signing for the Patriots. You hate this guy, don't you? I've heard you talk about this guy for about 10 years. I haven't heard one good word. What do you think about him today now that he's a Patriot? And, oh, by the way, the Red Sox have their scapegoat. Blake Swihart released today, DFA'd, Sandy Leon back. What does that all mean? To your thoughts on all of it. Jerry in the car on the Bruins. Go ahead, Jerry.
Yeah, you guys are spot on. I mean, first of all, Tavares and Marner. Let me stop. I said Mitch Marner is the best player on that team, bar none. Two-way player, three-zone player. Unbelievable player coming into his own. That said, Tavares and Marner are dominating the Bergeron line from the face-off circle out. And Babcock knows it. And Cassidy knows it, and he's not going to do anything about it. Now, do you stay with your guys? I don't know. However, what I do know is you got to do something in terms of making an adjustment because they're dominating you, and if this continues, this series will be over in six games, and Toronto will win it.
Okay, there's just two ways to do it. One way is to stick with your guys because you think they're better and to get to your guys and say, hello, time to wake up. Maybe a little internal motivation. Apparently they had a meeting today where Cassidy met with Bergeron in that line and sort of laid some things out and went over some film. So that's not doing nothing. It's just making a choice. You stick with your guys and try and get more out of them to win that matchup, or you run from the matchup, tip your cap, say you win that one, and try and get them away from it and adjust it. Either way, this is Talk Radio 101. We'll see what he does. We'll see how it works, and we'll have a discussion when it's all said and done. And that's, I think the stakes are going to be pretty clear.
I mean, if you tell me he wants to start with them intact in game four, fine. If he waits more than a period, if they're not going, he's waiting too long.
Mike in Leominster on Demaryius Thomas. How do you feel about this player, Mike?
Mike, he is such a good player. I mean, his stats over the past, 10 years, I mean, show it. You know, he's had like 6,000-yard receptions.
Oh, God.
I think 6 years in a row. Not many receivers can say that they've done that. And the reason why you've never heard any good things from people around here about him is because he played for Denver, a team that the Patriots did not beat, nor could Tom Brady. And I mean, he's been lousy the past couple of years because, I mean, who do you have? Trevor Siemian? I mean, you're better off having Mads to throw passes.
Yeah, I mean, he's caught some passes from some bums. I'll give you that. But he's also soft. You can also take him out of the game. One shot and he's done. He will fold his tent. He doesn't compete. Just the kind of receiver I hate. Just the kind of receiver I hate, and so do you. So do you, because you've not said a nice word about this guy for 10 years. But now he's a Patriot, and Bill obviously knows what he's doing. So there you go. There's that conversation. I can have the whole conversation for you. I don't even bother taking the call. I mean, I can have the whole back and forth, and we all know what it's going to be, right?
Okay, but the bottom line is that they're sort of up against it.
Did you hear what they gave him?
I heard the money's way too high.
What?
Way too high.
As much as $6 million for that stiff?
So again, it's got to be all incentive-based, right?
What's the guarantee? What's the base? Do we have this?
No, we don't have that yet.
I mean, I heard $6 million. I went, whoa.
That one I did spit out my organic water.
Like, that's a little too high for my liking for a guy that had a bad year last year and blew out his Achilles.
Oh, feh.
But it's got to be all incentives. It has to be.
Demaryius Thomas. Paul in Maine, the Savior's here, Sandy Leon. He's catching for Chris Sale tonight. What do you expect?
Well, I don't know. I mean, Chris Sale's got his Doug Mirabelli back. I mean, that's a good thing, I guess. But my big thing is it's his fourth start of the year, right? And, I mean, everyone's going to agree when Chris Sale's dealing and he's healthy, he's every bit as riveting to watch as Pedro was. But we haven't seen that except for the first inning in Seattle this year. If he can't hit the mid-90s tonight in New York, I think we've got to ask ourselves, is there something wrong with this guy?
Okay, Mass, is tonight the night to sound the alarm on Chris Sale?
No, I mean, I'm already there a little bit, but tonight's not like a make-or-break kind of night. So, look, with him, clearly, it's going to be a process. In fact, I go so far as to say the whole rotation. I don't know that he's any more or less behind anyone else.
Do you think the catcher's going to make a difference?
Maybe. I mean,
is it going to get him to throw harder?
No. No, but again, with my luck, given how much I like Swihart and everything else, Sale will come out tonight and strike out 13 in six innings.
How do you feel about them DFAing Swihart?
I hate it. I hate it because, again, I think it's a total cop-out. Now, to me, there are multiple layers to the story, one of which is Swihart. They screwed him over. They buried the kid. They ruined his development, and now they're giving up on him 17 games into the season. And the reality is it's not even that many. They were screaming and yelling about him after one start. One start in Seattle, they were bitching about him and Eduardo Rodriguez.
And the game plan.
I mean, they were all over him. They didn't want him there from the get-go. The manager and pitching coach did not want him there. So they attacked him after one game. So that's another layer. Cora won out. Cora and Lavangi won out. Dombrowski lost. Because clearly Dombrowski wanted Swihart on the roster, and I don't blame him. He had a 26-year-old kid, catcher's a late-developing position. Who knows? At the end of last year, he got better. Can we take a shot? But because the team's got its head up its ass to start the year, they need a scapegoat now, and he's out. I think it's a mistake. I do.
The Red Sox have their scapegoat. The Patriots have another bum receiver, and Bruce Cassidy refuses to change up his lines. Your thoughts on all these three things? After Murray's update, again, there was breaking news today on the Patriots. If you're just joining us, here it is.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
If we feel that it's really an impediment of us having success, then we're going to get away from it or break up the line. We do it at times. We move pasta around. But at the end of the day, if that's a matchup that he wants, he's going to get it eventually. Even on the road, you can get it at certain points. So we tried to get away from it on some icings to see if it would work our way. But tonight wasn't able to go. So we'll see how it plays out Wednesday. But I honestly don't mind it. I mean, it's two good lines going head to head every night. We're going to, you know, it's going to tilt our way at some point. Our players are too good.
It's going to tilt our way at some point. Our players are too good. We'll see. We'll see, Bruce. Frank the Tank on the Bees. Go ahead, Frank. Frank the Tank, are you there, buddy?
I'm here. You hear me?
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay. I agree with a lot of things what you're saying about with the Bergeron line. I mean, they're not playing up to par right now, and they're definitely putting a beating on Pastrnak. So I don't know why the Bruins aren't putting a beating on Tavares, since he's, you know, doing very well against Bergeron. Hit him every time you get the chance to do it. Another thing that the Bruins are just getting killed on, besides their just stupidity with clearing the puck, you know, Toronto was really, really gearing down on the defensemen, getting them down there and just physically taking the puck away from them in the Bruins' end. And the Bruins aren't doing that to Toronto. They did it in game two, and they didn't do it in game one. They didn't do it in game three. And believe me, folks, if they come back to Boston down 3-1, they are in no way winning this series. And all the beer, cigarettes, antacid, and aspirin that you have is not going to help you. I told you guys at the beginning of this series, do not underestimate the offense of this team. And right now, I mean, the Bruins, they're just not playing their game, and they're getting their asses kicked.
So here's what I think we underestimated with Toronto, because they haven't lit it up. I mean, they scored 3 goals last night. I underestimated their goaltender, who I think has been excellent. And I underestimated their ability to grit it up a little bit and grind it up and defend solidly. Muzzin's made a difference.
I mean games 1 and 3, they've done well there.
And Tavares has made a difference, and even without Kadri.
Right, that to me was the thing. Like, I expected them to fold like they did last year when they lost Kadri for his stupidity. Last night, they actually played more up. I was surprised. I really was.
I mean, to me, that's been the biggest difference in the Leafs from now to, you know, obviously Tavares.
They got balls.
They're disciplined in their own zone, too. Like, the end of that game, you got guys blocking shots, the crowd in the front of the net. There was, for the Bruins, there was traffic in front of the net in game one, and there was traffic last night. So the Leafs get a lead, and they just buckle down, and you can't score since when?
Couple open lines here on our last segment of calls, 617-779-0985. Grab them if you like. Jim in Brighton on the Patriots receivers. Hi, Jim.
Hey, how you doing, guys? I just want to say I agree with you, Felger, about Demaryius Thomas. I think he's probably essentially a Josh Gordon insurance contract. But my question is, why did they whiff on someone who, to me, not in their league talent-wise, but a quintessential Patriot, Chris Hogan? A known entity, you know, cheap. I just don't get it.
So that one doesn't bother me, Jim, as much because it's not like they got beat to the punch. They weren't a day late or a dollar short. They didn't want the player. Adam Humphries is like, you know, that's one that's closer to the bone. Or was it Beasley up in Buffalo?
Cole Beasley.
Weren't a couple of these guys, weren't they in on him? And the player said, well, we had already agreed with the other team, so mm-hmm. I wasn't going to go back. You actually had the high bid on Humphreys. But he said, no, I already had a handshake with Rabel in Tennessee. And so that's one to get all bent out of shape about. What, you weren't ready?
Yeah, they reportedly had interest in Sterling Shepard with the Giants, too. So what, the offer wasn't enough to convince the Giants to trade him?
It feels to me like they were a little asleep at the switch. And the Gronkowski thing, I think, threw them off a little bit money-wise. And they were expecting the player, I think. And they put the deadline too late on him. They put the pressure on him too late to give him a decision. By the time Gronkowski gives him a decision, you're into free agency. The players you wanted are gone. Now you have some money to spend, but who are you spending it on? And now they're just throwing crap against the wall.
Yeah, or they overestimated the lure of these guys wanting to come to New England and playing with Brady.
Maybe that, too.
I'm just throwing that on the list. I'm not telling you that's what I believe. I'm telling you it's got to be one of those things.
They overplayed their hand.
Right. Comprehensively, they overplayed their hand.
The receiving core is the island of misfit toys. And I know that, you know, we've said that over the years, but now this is something. You got a kid that's 5'8 with no hamstring. You've got a couple other guys that no one's ever heard of. Who's the guy from the Redskins?
Marquise Harris.
Yeah.
Then you got...
He's 6'3", actually.
Then you have Josh Gordon, who, again, I will repeat, one of the most dysfunctional and unreliable players in the history of North American sport. On one side... And then Demaryius Thomas, one of the softest receivers in the league, on the other, coming off a ripped Achilles at 30 years old and what looks like a really bad Dewey, or I don't know if it's Dewey, but this just happened like a month or two ago. Demaryius Thomas has been charged with vehicular assault, reckless driving, and lack of insurance in connection with the crash earlier this month in Denver. This was from February 28th. Thomas turned himself into police on Wednesday night after a warrant had been issued for his arrest. How many warrants is this team dealing with? Between the owner and Bennett, who just got out of his thing, who pushed the poor gal in the wheelchair.
Oh, that was, I think, trumped up in the first place.
It was?
Yeah, come on.
Well, same with, I mean, look, the Patriots are just unfairly targeted. Wait till the Patriots fans get a hold of this thing. I feel bad for the prosecutors in Denver now. These people are now in the crosshairs. Once you people sink your teeth into these guys.
He was just trying to get somewhere.
Thomas was involved in a single vehicle crash early in the morning on February 16th, his car rolling and coming to a stop in a grassy median. Thomas, who was driving, and a male passenger suffered minor injuries, while a female passenger suffered what CBS4 in Denver called more serious but not life-threatening injuries. The probable cause statement filed by a Denver police investigator said that Thomas was traveling at a high rate of speed when he drove off the left side of the Auroria Parkway in Denver. His vehicle striking a raised median and becoming airborne.
That thing shouldn't have been there.
Before tumbling end over end and landing on its wheels. He went spinning in the air, this dude.
And nobody got hurt?
All three passengers were taken to a hospital, one suffering serious bodily injuries. So he was the speed limit on the Auroria. I know I'm mispronouncing that, probably just embarrassingly. The speed limit on the Auroria Parkway is 30 miles an hour. The investigation determined that Thomas was driving faster than 70. The crash happened at 2:20 in the morning. It doesn't say anything about Dewey or anything like that. It doesn't say that, but I don't know. So, you know, another guy with a warrant. Just add him to the list. That's your receiving core. The island of misfit toys.
Yeah, he's the gun that squirts jelly.
Joe and Seabrook on the Bruins. Go ahead, Joe.
Oh, so infuriating last night. I think they got their ass kicked in all three zones. It's not just the top line. You know, let's start with Torrey Krug. I thought he sucked last night, too.
Joe, he sucked.
He sucked.
Oh, he blew. It was so awful to watch. That last 5 minutes of the game, like, will you shoot the bleeping puck? They're trying to get too cute. They got their asses kicked. How many times did they go into Toronto zone and it comes right back out? How many passes got picked off?
Joe.
I thought the whole team sucked.
A million times.
I missed him.
As opposed to getting it down low and working on those D, who still aren't good. We've made Muzzin look like Larry Robinson, but they still aren't good. As opposed to chipping it down low and going to work on those bums, they're dipsy-do, dangling, losing the puck. That is frustrating. He's right about that.
Well, I mean, that's what Frank the Tank said, and it's what Cassidy said. We didn't make them play 200 feet, and that's what he's basically talking about. You're not getting the pucks in deep there and then making them work and beating them up a little bit. None of that happened.
Oh, I have trouble keeping track of all the legal entanglements with you guys. Ralphie in the car on the Kraft investigation. What do you got, Ralphie?
Well, it's not really the investigation. It's just Kraft made his first appearance this weekend, but yet he wasn't able to go to the Red Sox opening day. I was just wondering if there was anything to, you know, blowjob. But
you got that, Jay Stu? Jimmy, just give me a verbal that I okay. So right, this does go back to the opening day thing. Kraft didn't want to go to opening day, laying low. I get it, but then a couple nights later, he's courtside at the Garden on the Jumbotron, taking a victory lap.
That's a good point.
So did he really want to lay low, or is this another baby thing where we're now going to blame the Globe because he went in for two rub and tugs in 12 hours? That's the Globe's fault. Okay, good. Whatever makes you guys happy, whatever gets you off, that's it. But now it's the Globe's fault because he ran in there twice in 12, 14 hours. That's John Henry's fault. Okay.
I mean, unless they think the Celtics crowd's a softer landing.
There's no question about that.
Which it is.
Mussolini could walk in there with a Celtics jersey and you people would give him a standing O. You'd chant MVP.
I mean, they don't boo anybody, really. Although they did boo the team a little during the year. I give them credit for that. But I don't know. I don't know what the logic was there. In fact, I didn't even put that together. I'm such an idiot. Good God, that's true. He did. He went to the Garden instead of the Fenway. Ugh.
Yeah, no, it's the Globe's fault now. Yeah, definitely. Globe's fault that Robert went to the Orchids twice in 14 hours. Yeah, good John Henry. It set him up. Corey in Somerville on Demaryius Thomas. What do you think, Corey?
Hey, guys, what's going on? So a caller earlier made the point about Demaryius being a good insurance contract in case Josh Gordon, is unavailable. And I think that's it's a nice thought, but I don't even see this guy lasting through camp. I think he's going to be 2019 Reggie Wayne. This guy's coming off a bum Achilles. He's going to come in here, see how hard he's got to work, and he's going to fold under the pressure. I just don't see how this guy is going to help us at all. And even if he makes it through camp, he's not going to get Brady's trust. I mean, this guy has got stone hands. Regardless of the production he's had over the last 10 years, he's got a serious problem with drops. Really don't see how this guy's going to help us that much, and would love to hear you guys' thoughts.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%.
Yeah, I'll tell you how he might help. Well, I don't know. He's got two hamstrings. Can we start there?
And a pulse.
How about there?
But no Achilles. So,
okay.
All right.
No, they sewed it together. It's fine. It's still in there. They didn't remove it. It's fine. And look, at the end of the day, I told you, I don't love the player either. At this point, would you rather have some bodies or no bodies?
I'd rather have no bodies that I know will compete. That's more the Patriots' DNA. That's more who they've gone to war with in the past, and that's more who's worked out with them in the past.
No, I didn't say somebody or nobody. I said some bodies or no bodies. I mean, actual physical beings there that have played wide receiver in the league.
I'd rather have guys I've never heard of who have a chance to come in here and work hard and take a shot and get up.
Okay. They don't have much of anything.
My new guy's going to be this Bruce Ellington kid. The kid who's 5'6 with one hamstring. That's going to be my guy.
Okay. Good.
I'd much rather have, because I bet you something tells me.
But he's just a return man. Go with Harris. At least he actually has played more of the position.
Probably feels like a big, slow, stiff. To me, the Ellington kid, that's going to be my guy.
Oh, no, that'll be great between the 20s. And I hope Steven Gostkowski kicks 85 field goals this year, because you're going to need someone big to catch the ball in the red zone. So I don't mind them taking a chance on Demaryius Thomas. I don't love the player either. But at this stage, I mean, you could pick up a bag full of dog crap and I'd take it.
John in Boston, on that note. Yes, John.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So first off, I don't like the signing. I'd rather spend the $6 million on the defense. I think it's much more needed there. But this is the bigger picture that we're all missing here is that this is a former McDaniels offensive player. And it's really revealing kind of, about where this organization is in terms of McDaniels' influence, how much power Bill still has, and if maybe McDaniels has an ear of John or Bob.
I mean, it's a fair thing to bring up. I mean, Bill still has all the power. Don't tell me, if Bill didn't want this guy, he wouldn't take this guy. But it does speak to Josh a little bit. I mean, that was Josh's draft pick. Maybe one of his better ones.
I mean, Josh had Danny Amendola, too, first, didn't he?
Yes, that's right.
So again, I don't mind that part of it, because the guy has some track record of success in the NFL. At this stage, I'll take anyone who can breathe. That's where I am.
Pretty low bar there.
Yes, it is very low.
Murray, what are we renaming Tuesdays now?
Oh, it is Told You So Tuesdays here on Felger and Mass.
Told You So Tuesdays. Even though no one ever told us these things, you still feel the need to tell us I told you so? Is that the subject of today's final word, Jimmy?
Sure is.
Okay, that comes your way right after these words.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Maz's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The caller's bringing knowledge to the table.
Maz, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
And the final word brought to you by Town Fair Tire. Looking for the best deal on tires? There is only one place to go. That's Town Fair Tire. The best prices and great free services. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. All right, if you missed this earlier, there's a new theme to Tuesdays here on Felger and Maz. It's Told You So Tuesdays. Here are some examples of this new Told You So Tuesday here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I Told You So Tuesdays on Felger and Maz. Told you guys, you didn't listen.
I told you so.
Scott and Weymouth, what do you got, Scotty?
This team has no fire. Has there been a fight in this series yet? No joke.
But Scott, so what, you're ignoring game two?
They just, Felger, call me whatever you want to call me. I've been playing and watching the games since I was 3 feet tall.
Scotty Bowman on line one. I love, how come these Bruins fans got to say, I play the game?
Yeah, Scott Hartnell.
No one cares that you play men's league. No one cares. It doesn't qualify you. Please stop saying it, Bruins fan. Fans, it's annoying. It's dumb. It's silly. Unless you're Scott LaChance, I don't know why I pulled up that name, but unless you actually played, you know, Scotty Bowman, you can say you played. Scott and Weymouth, you don't get to say it. Good God, it doesn't count.
That was Scott and Weymouth, who's just the worst. Now let's hear I Told You So from Dean, who called in.
I Told You So Tuesdays on Felger and Maz. Told you guys, you didn't listen.
I told you so.
Dean in Scituate. Go ahead, Dean.
Hey, I know you guys are goofing on people that played, but it's someone who actually won a championship with Amonte and Roenick at their academy in the 80s. I think I have some perspective on Bergeron at the faceoff.
Okay, so hold on.
What line were you on, Dean?
High school? If you played high school, can you say you played?
No.
Sorry, Dean, you don't pass the test. You're out. I don't care who you played with.
No. He was lined up right next to Roenick.
Yeah.
Thayer Academy.
He was a fourth liner.
The manager.
Finally, we heard.
As someone who played in high school with Roenick.
He was a Zamboni driver. Yeah. Would you?
God, please.
Here's an I Told You So from Chris, listening in Chicago.
I Told You So Tuesdays on Felger and Maz. Told you guys you didn't listen.
I told you so.
Chris in Chicago. Go ahead, Chris.
Guys, does Don Sweeney have naked pictures of you guys? Because I just don't understand why you let him off the hook. Why do you think the Blue Jackets are doing what they're doing? Any ideas? Just throwing it out there. Any ideas why they're doing what they're doing?
So you it's all about Duchesne and DeZingle?
Are you kidding me? They took two of the three best players on Ottawa. Now it's their third line. And what did the Bruins do? You guys are making all these excuses. It's the same team that shouldn't have beat Toronto last year. They brought back again this year. Why do you guys give him a hall pass? I know it's the home of the Bruins, but come on.
Let me ask you, Chris. Did you call us during the season saying the Bruins are in trouble because the roster isn't good enough? I don't remember hearing that call from you.
They're not good enough, Michael. You know that.
Well, no.
They're
but
not good enough. It's
no,
the same
well,
team
no. But I'm just asking why you didn't call me 2 weeks ago and say that.
Oh, my God.
No.
You got to be.
No, I mean, that's what I would say to you. Oh, my God. You know, the time to call it genius is to say, yeah, they have the second best record in hockey, but they're not that good, and you'll see in the playoffs. But I didn't seem to get that call from you. Instead, all the calls I got were, oh, wait till you see the Bruins again. Look, they're poised for a cup run. That's all I hear. So if you're into run, blame the GM at the end of the year when they're second or third in the league in points, and you can then tell me that they're overrated. You'd be right. You'd look like a genius. Sort of easy to do when they're down 2-1 to turn around and blame the personnel. They've been the best, one of the best regular season teams in hockey for the last 2+ years since Cassidy took over. So complain about the GM then, not now.
Yeah, that's an I told you so, and I never even told you the first time.
Oh, no, I mean,
and that guy.
You missed the best I told you so. There was another guy that calls I told you about, Tampa. You told me Tampa was going to be down 3-0 to Columbus. You told me that. Yeah, okay, buddy.
Yeah, I called you guys 2 weeks ago and told you, but Tampa was soft.
What high school team do you play on?
I love that guy. I've been skating since I was 3 feet high. Scott Wayman. Okay, Scott.
That subsequent caller said, I play knee hockey with my nephew down in the basement. Naz, we got on the baseball reporters.
So Red Sox are in New York tonight to open up a 2-game series with the Yankees. Chris Sale back on the mound, and they made a personnel move today that is going to make Red Sox fans very, very happy because I've been hearing from them. I personally think the Red Sox are stupid for doing this, but I'll tell you what that move was and why I'm eager to see how it turns out too.
Okay, Red Sox have their scapegoat. Maz has the story. Coming your way in 90 seconds, no commercials, then you get the baseball reporters. We're back at it tomorrow at 2 p.m. from the Garden in advance of Celtics Game 2, Bruins Game 4. That's how we'll roll tomorrow, and we'll talk to you then, Tony.
Bye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.